Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, you wanna know? Act just like you know. Whoa, you just ought to know. Yeah, when you're feeling down and low and you need a place to go.
Philadelphia back in the day. Rest in peace, my brother. He was a wonderful inspiration to me, and so, you know, that's why I had to play him. His music has to live on, and so we will keep your legacy alive to the Fat Larry's family and stuff. We just want y'all to know we love Fat Larry, and we appreciate the music that he did out of Philly International. Anyway, guys, so how are you doing? This is Wardell Potts Jr., and I just want to say hi to all you guys around the world. Hope you are good and God has been good to you and you are feeling good about yourselves. Thank you for choosing Solar Records Radio. I know you have plenty of other stations and that you can listen to, but thanks for choosing us. We appreciate that very much. So before we get into the Solar Wants to Dance segment of our show, we have to take care of our business first. And, you know, and that means that, you know, we decided that on Saturdays, we're going to turn this more into a real health show. We've talked, you know, when I'm talking about, when I say health, I mean just mentally healthy. We need to be aware of things that happening that's happening around us and stuff. And so we started off in October talking about breast cancer awareness. Last month we talked about dementia, and so now this month we're going to talk about Alzheimer's. wow, that's ridiculous that my brain autism awareness. But I was just sitting here like stunned that my brain wouldn't say the word, and I'm looking at the word. I don't have to remember. I'm looking at it. It just wouldn't come out. So, but anyway, that's dyslexia. Maybe we'll talk about that one day, where the brain just does what it wants to do whenever it wants to do it. And but it's a challenge for me, and I go after the challenge. I have a very hard time with reading because of it. And so, but I force myself to read, and I force myself through it because that's the only way. I can't let it defeat me. I have to be it. I have to go after it. So I do it all the time now, and it's something else. And I put myself on the spot because I do it on the air, too, so the whole world can hear me. So it's a lot of pressure, and it's all good. So with that being said, I have been really blessed with a specialist in my life, in my family, autism specialist, Dr. Gayla Massey, my wife. And so I'm going to bring her on right now to help us through this, because this is something that she has. She's so passionate about it. She's been doing this for years. And I could see after she retired, like how much she wonders about the children and cares about the children and hoping that the children are okay. And then I also get to see how she is after she leaves, you know, working with the children, and how it breaks her heart and how much she loves them. And so she's the perfect person to me to have on here to help us to understand a little bit about the awareness of autism. So, Dr. Gayla Massey, are you there?
Oh, I am, dear. Hello to all the people out there today. Thank you for listening to the show.
Yes. And so you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, your education in regards to this topic?
Yes. I started off in one state and in another state, and then returned back to that home state. So I have kind of a range of locations and also a range of experiences. And I have been everything from a diagnostic preschool specialist in special education, general education background, and also I have been a special education teacher in what we call resource programs, and also in special day class programs. There's different names, but from children that are primarily in the general ed but do need services, and children who are able to integrate, hopefully that's what our goal is, with general ed students that are primarily having to be served with special education resources and personnel due to the severity of their disabilities. And I have worked as what we call a helping teacher, material specialist, helping general ed teachers with at-risk populations. I have been a educational diagnostician and returning to that soon. And I have been a school psychologist, which is a certificated program in California. And I have been an autism program specialist at the preschool level. When I got my doctorate, I had to pick up two masters in between there to do all of that. But when I got my doctorate in psychology with a specialization in educational psychology, I really became interested in a lot of the different populations of children that receive special education services. It was after that I became an autism program specialist for a district. I also was an instructor, adjunct professor at two different colleges, one for the master's in education, general education, helping students with interventions, recognition first of at-risk populations, and then interventions to use them in a general education program. And I also was an adjunct professor at a college or university from both master's and doctoral levels in the area of licensed educational psychology. So I've had a background of experiences. Oh, and also I've been a mother
Yes. Well, you know, that's a lot of information. I mean, you obviously have been involved in this for quite a while, and I know you have to be passionate to have you know, taken all of those classes and then to also dive into all those different experiences. And so thank you for doing that for our children, because we need somebody like that. We need you, and we appreciate you very much. So let me, I want to get right down to this. I have a few questions for you. And I want the listeners also to be aware of that we're going to be doing this for 4 weeks, and we'll have different people coming on throughout the, the month. And we also are aware that it's the holidays. So the best part about our show is that the archives are there. So you guys are away doing family stuff and enjoying, you know, please do that first. And this will be there. You can always come back and listen to it anytime. Just, you'll see the show there. Just click on it and it'll be there for you. Okay. So I want to get down to what I want to ask you this. Are there risk factors for autism?
Yes, but I think first, if it's okay, let me explain what autism is.
Okay.
It's the incidence of autism spectrum disorder, and the short version is ASD, has been really increasing at alarming rates. Even back when I did my doctoral thesis on autism, there were a lot of studies that were showing that autism was increasing. Then there have been new statistics. Even back at the time, say in 2006, ASD was the sixth most commonly classified disability among children getting special education services in the United States. And there has been a change of number of students identified in California under the eligibility condition of autism from 2000 to 2005 was 109.2%, the greatest percentage increase in all categories. It's not a rare disorder, and it's been very impactful on parents and schools, very much so. It is a developmental disability, and it's characterized by different qualitative impairments. We're looking at socialization, communication, and behavior that varies across settings. There is what we call a triad or threesome of impairments in socialization and communication. And those repetitive behaviors and communication, we see that reflected in the entire social, behavioral, and language difficulties that are often characteristic of autism spectrum disorders.
Can you just, real quick, can you just break that down in simple English? Like, what?
Oh, I'm going to go over each one.
But just break it down, you know, so we can, so people that are not as educated as you are can understand what it is that you're telling us about our children. Just break it down.
Okay, I'm going to go on each one.
Just remember this, we are hurting. We are confused. We are not sure what to do with our child. And so now we're coming to you and we're asking you, what do you mean my child is autistic? I need you to explain that to me so that I could understand it.
Okay, I'm going to go into each one of those things that I talked about that are the characteristics of children with autism. I'll go in more detail each one, as well as that triad that we see problems in the social interaction and why that occurs, and they repeat behaviors over and over again, and their communication is definitely a problem. This disorder goes across all kinds of spectrums. It goes across language and communication. It goes across behavior and how children behave. It goes into the neurological and how the brain works and functions, both what we call neurologically, that we'll get into detail, and cognitive too. But first, it's important to know that why we need to think about this is because the incidence has increased so much I was telling you about what it was way, way back, you know, in the day from 2000, 2005. But right now, we're seeing a huge increase in children. There's about 1 in 44 kids that are being identified with autism. And that's why it's so important for our parents to realize and also know it's 4 times more likely to be in boys than in girls. So we really need to begin to look at our children because it's very important, just like you're saying, Wardell, that we know because it can be recognizable and even evaluated and identified in as young as 2 years of age.
Okay, but listen, I need to back you up again because I was just told that my child is autistic. What is that? I need you to tell me what is that? What's wrong with my child? And if you could just break it down simple, I would appreciate that because when they told me and they tried to explain it, it was so over my head. I had no idea what they were talking about. I need you to break it down to the simplest way. It's just saying, you know, there's something wrong with their brain. This was something happened in their brain and something caused it. I need to know it simple that's causing them to act the way that they act. Can you just please break it down simple?
Okay, well, every child can appear different because children with autism can range all the way from being cognitively delayed. We used to call it mental retardation, but now we don't use that terminology. We use more words that I think are kinder.
So when they're cognitively delayed, that means they are slow.
No, that means that they just don't have those skills cognitively, intellectually. But it can range all the way from that to children that are gifted, that have extreme intelligence. And that's why it's such a big range and why it's so important to look at all the different ways that they can be acting. And so if you're told that a child has difficulties and they're being labeled as autistic, you've probably already been seeing some of this because these kids often have problems with repeating patterns of behaviors. They just do the same thing over and over and over and over again. You've probably seen that as a parent. And they also have repetitive interests. They're stereotypical repetitive interests. For example, with older children, they might have the interest in jokes, and they tell the jokes over and over and over again. Their whole life is telling jokes. Or it could be in another area. They could have a big interest in insects. They know everything about every insect. It could be in any area, but it is a repeated interest that is beyond normal, beyond what most people, even people who, you know, are very interested in different things, but this takes up their whole social interaction process because they really are hooked on it. It's just repeated over and over. And a lot of the children, too, you have to look at communication because there could be a general delay in language. Like by 2 years of age, a lot of kids are able to use single words, and they're really using phrases by age 3. But there's a real delay in that. They're not using language at the normal rate. And there could be, you know, children that are older, you know, that are identified, but their language, again, is repetitive, or it's just doesn't fit the normal pattern for the child that age. So another thing too, they can develop other kinds of behaviors. I mean, adaptive behavior, knowing how to, you know, help themselves, their curiosity, all of that can be just fine. But when you put it in the context of social interaction, you see the difference.
Okay.
You see that they have so many problems relating to other people. You often will see that they don't have good eye contact. They
yeah.
just look away. They can't
yes.
make that eye contact.
I know. And,
yeah,
I see that all the time in them, and it just breaks my heart. It breaks my heart for them because they're little human beings that's trying to figure it out. And for them, the way that they're acting is normal. That's normal. Like we're the ones that something's not quite right with us because we are not understanding them. Let me just read you a thought and a question from one of the listeners. They said, children with autism find change difficult. Some parents try to keep a high level of daily familiarity, right? But would it be better to introduce changes daily so that it becomes normal?
And that's the question she has?
Yeah, that's the question. Would it be better to...
I think it's very important. It depends on the severity of the child, at which time you begin to do that. They do need structure, and they do need what we call schedules often. Now, remember, there's all different range of autism. For those children that really, really have difficulties, you will often provide schedules. In fact, at school, they may have a little schedule of all the events during the day so they don't get lost. And what's happening. Same thing at home. You know, they have a strict schedule of what they do when they get up in the morning and brushing their teeth. You know, there's a schedule for everything, going through breakfast. It provides security for them when they have a schedule.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But one thing is that once they're doing really well with the schedule, or if they already do well with the schedule, you do want to try to introduce small changes because that's life, right? I mean,
yes,
life
right.
is unpredictable. So we have to do that. But I think we have to have them understand schedules. And we're talking about children with more severe disabilities. They have to know a repetitive schedule that helps structure them. When they don't, it becomes very disconcerting and confusing to them. They have a lot of difficulties. So there is another thing that I think is real helpful is, I believe it's Carol Gray, did social stories. And she had all kinds of books on social stories and actual social stories that you can put in that schedule that really tell children what needs to be done in a particular setting. Who are the people in that setting? What is the expected behavior for that setting? What happens if unexpected behavior comes up? For other people that aren't expecting for a child to behave in a certain way, and what are the consequences of all of that? And she had specifically written ones for all kinds of situations, like going to a party, a birthday party, going to get ready for school in the morning, what you do after you get home. What do you do, again, more in those social settings, though, rather than schedules? When you go... to your grandparents' house. I mean, when you go to the shopping mall. So she had those general ones, but I always found it's very important that parents kind of write their own because every home setting is different. And you actually put in the specific names of the people in the home or at the birthday party, and you really
okay.
personalize it. So teaching
okay.
parents how to write social stories and using them in school settings as well.
Okay. Well, all right. So you know we are live, and so and the good part about that is that people are asking questions, and so and this is really good because you know some people are going through this as we speak. Now I just want to do a disclaimer real fast. and to just basically say to you that Dr. Gayla Massey is here as a person who loves these children. She's not here to give you advice. That is not what she's doing here. She's just a person who's been in this field for a long time, and she loves them. But if in your local area, wherever you may be in the world, you go and talk to a specialist yourself in regards to your children. But she is just here to, so she will do her best to answer some of your questions. But, you know, you need to go to your doctor, your local doctor, to confirm anything that you learn here today. Because, like she said, all children are different. So, and with that being said, now.
May I add that to not just your, you know, your doctor. The doctors are familiar, but, you know, I think that psychologists are very good at looking at all the nuances of all the behaviors and can give you even more help. Often children are prescribed medications. And, you know, that through the medical doctor can be very important. But there's also a lot of behavioral changes that you can make that a psychologist would be very helpful in contacting. Can I say one thing? Because I said there's such a range. Children that are known as Asperger's, are children that really used to be in this particular category, and then with the different diagnostic manuals, it was being placed under more speech and language evaluations and difficulties, because it's all very often these kids are very, very smart, but they don't recognize, you know, the conventional rules of a conversation. They don't understand nonverbal cues.
Can you tell me why they don't understand?
I wish I could tell you why. It's just the way that their brain operates.
Okay.
They just can't pick up those things, and they have a lot of difficulty with social skills. And they also, parents, you know this because they often have a lot of motor clumsiness that may be more characteristic of Asperger's, and odd kind of motor mannerisms.
Okay.
And,
just real quick, I got, because we're going to be running out of time. We only got 15 minutes left. But I just want to ask you this. So children with autism need structure. So make their life non-structured. Isn't that better? That's from the listeners.
To make their
life non-structured.
Wouldn't that be, because for
why
them to
be
successful in this world, because with an unstructured, you will have probably a lot more outbursts with behavior. They don't know what to expect at any moment. And they, especially when they're interacting with other children, they have a lot more difficulty. Some of the kids in a home setting, especially those kids that are Asperger's, you don't even recognize it until those concerns come up with exposures with other children. Even those children can be seen as so gifted and precocious. You know, they talk before they walk. There's just, you don't see it as parents. So you might think that it would be better, but the kids really do better with structure. And once you have that in place and you have better behaviors, then you do want to expose them to some unstructured situations so that they can learn behaviorally how to adapt.
So that's what their point is. So structure adds to the problem when they have to make changes. So if you're structuring them the whole time, and then all of a sudden you want to add something new, that creates the problem. Why can't we add something new consistently so they get used to something being added, and so that way they won't have such a big problem with something new?
You can do that later, after they have developed the appropriate behaviors. After you provided structure and they've developed the appropriate behaviors, then you can put a little, you know, change. You want to, so they can learn to adapt. That's what adulthood is all about. But you don't just bombard them with that. They don't have the capacity neurologically and socially and communicatively to handle a bombardment of unstructured situations. So you first want to go slowly.
I get that. But you said earlier that they're all different. So if they're all different, why are we treating them all the same?
Because the children with autism, one of the primary features is that they do better with structure, and because they have so many things. See, a lot of these kids are very sensitive to change. They're very sensitive sensory-wise, especially to sensory change. They can be very auditorily hypersensitive to noise. So like in this respect, you know, it's right. You want to try to provide situations where they're prepared and then introduce, they can have noise. But a lot of kids, you know, you see a lot of the children with autism wearing those headphones, which will cut out some of that noise because it can be very, very upsetting to them. So you have to first know your own child, though, and you have to know how severe they are and what is the range. First teach and then reach for more change.
Oh, okay. I mean, I really like that, and I hope that my executive producer likes that as well, because I think that'll be a good flyer. So say that again. First teach and then reach for change, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So these kids need to be like, what about I don't want to say normal. What about the other type of children that don't need that kind of structure? But don't they need structure too? Don't everyone need structure? Don't all of us need structure?
Well, doesn't everyone need structure?
How do you teach an autistic?
We all benefit from structure.
Okay. I'm just wondering, does the child that's autistic, that you, do you guys allow them to be in the same classroom as the other children?
Oh, it's important.
So they're learning indirectly.
How do you handle yourself in different environments? You want them to be exposed to good role models. You know, you want them to be exposed with children who do know how to communicate and all that. Yeah, so it's very important to have them in general education. You don't want to just have them all day all by themselves.
Right.
Although,
I agree.
There will some kids that are so severe with behavioral problems, you need that in the beginning.
Okay, so I agree with that, but I'm trying to put myself in the child's shoes. And so it's, to me, I just wonder, do they feel like you guys are treating them differently in front of these other kids, which is embarrassing, and it causes them to be even more hesitant into being, quote, normal, quote, you're saying that they're not the normal. You're not saying that, but I'm trying to describe this. They're not normal kids, and I don't know if that, I think that's the wrong a phrase to use.
I don't like that word.
Yeah, but so they don't act like the other kids, but you have them in the room with these other kids, and how does that affect the child being in that classroom where these other kids, to them, may be wrong with them? Because, is it that way? Do they look at the other kids and think something's wrong with them?
I don't like to use the word normal versus abnormal.
Do they look at the other kids and think something's wrong with them? Do they look at the other kids and say, you know, they're not like me? Can they recognize that? Can they identify the difference? Because if they can't, then why are they?
It depends on the severity.
But if they can't, then why are they in there with them? If it's not really working for them anyway, if they can't identify the difference, then and you put them in there, then isn't that hard for them?
When you're saying they, you're talking about the child with
children,
autism.
Yeah, the child with autism.
Children,
yes, I'm sorry.
So I'm trying to understand completely your question.
Okay, so my question is that will you put them in there in the room with other kids so that they can see that this is the normal behavior?
A model, right?
Right, okay, a model. This is a model of the way that you or that we want you to act. This is what we feel that you, right? And so the child is in there watching this. I'm asking you, if the child is not receiving that information in a good way, how do you first identify that? And then secondly, what do you do when you do identify it?
See if I can get my head wrapped around this concept. Every child is different. Every child. Children with autism even have different differences. There are commonalities, like the ones I said, you know, sometimes, or especially with children with Asperger's, which I've said again now is more identified under speech and language, but their communication process is different. They don't pick up nonverbal, you know, they don't pick up nonverbal cues. They often repeat words over and over again. There's differences. So I think we need to look at it as not normal and abnormal, but differences in social response and motor response. So they have to learn what that is so they can make changes. So again, it goes back to teaching. Now, some of those kids really benefit from being pulled out, you know, being pulled out of the general education classroom so that they can be taught these things and then go back so they can practice and utilize it so it can become more of a behavior for them. So they benefit from both. What you need to have set up is just cues often in the general education classroom. It could even be just a word that the teacher says that the other kids don't know that that's a cue for the child. But the child has already learned that when the teacher says so-and-so, that means so-and-so.
Okay. No, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. I know. Okay,
sense?
So... Yes, yes. So we're running out of time. So I want to get to another part. And thank you so much for, you know, taking time out to help us to try to understand what these babies are going through as we love them and we want the best for them. I want to ask you this. Now, the
one. Can I just say this, honey? Remember yours. Okay,
I'll try. Okay, go ahead and say it.
I think it's very, very important people to realize that you try to identify and start providing treatment as early as possible because you will have a much better chance and a much higher success rating if you get the child identified and start it with treatment as early as possible. If you wait, then it becomes a lot more difficult to change that behavior.
At what age should you be identifying that? At what age should we be able to identify it? When is it like
a
2 or 3?
Well, you can identify it as early as the age of 2. Like I said before, the age of 2, because you're already beginning to see language patterns. You're already beginning to see social patterns. If you have a child that's only in the home, though, and is not out there at the age of 2 with kids, that's why it's important to have kids socialize as early as possible so that you can see if there's any differences. We find that to say abnormalities.
If we get them in help as soon as possible, can we fix this, or it will never be fixed?
Well, that's a really good question. People have, I don't know if it's, quote, ever fixed, because the brain, how it's structured neurologically, all of the reasons that go back to genetic influences, it is very important to think about, because you have to look at the genetic influences on the what you're seeing. There's all kinds of neuropsychological factors. You know, there can be a lot of early disturbances in development even prior to 30 weeks before birth. It's a lot more subtle things you're going to see in working memory and how to, you know, for them to understand verbal material. So it involves higher cortical functions. So there can be even, I hate to use this word, but abnormalities in the frontal lobe of the brain. So these things are there. Those things don't go away. It's just that you've hopefully taught children to adapt and to be able to. And let me say this, honey. Often we've gotten the kids really early and things are going really well, and then they hit junior high. And junior high, middle school is when, you know, for a lot of kids, is a hard time. And you might see more difficulties in that social functioning. And you thought, oh, quote, it's cured. But then you hit that time in, you know, a child's life that it gets more, harder. And then you can work on that and things get normal. And then it hits again in the 30s. When people are older, especially high functioning.
I want to. You told me to remember my question, but if you keep talking, I'm gonna forget it. So I got to get it in now.
Okay, great.
So you said, what was the word that you used that I had to do with intelligence? What was the word that you said? Some of them are so smart. So that's what I want to talk about right now. The smart ones, the ones that are super intelligent. And so this is, I want to share this with you. I may have already shared it with you, but I want to share, not on the air. And I just need you to help me to understand this now. And I don't even know. Okay, I'm going to just get to it. You'll probably know what I'm talking about. So there's this kid, right, that the teacher had said, this is, I need you guys to figure out this with the whole class. I need you to figure out this the answer to this question. I need you to tell me the answer to the question. And when you get the answer to the question, raise your hand. And so she put this, and I think it was, you know, like some crazy math.
Probably math.
Yeah, it was very you know, it was something that was out there, and so. So the kids started, you know, figuring out, trying to figure out what this is, how to do it. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, the autistic kid raised his hand and says, I got the answer. And so the teacher had to say, you have the answer already? He goes, yes. And she says, okay, come up to the front and explain to us, how did you get the answer? How did you get that? How did you come to that conclusion? And so, he said, this is the answer. And then the teacher was like, yes, that's right. But how did you come to it? And he said, I can't tell you.
Right,
and
exactly.
And as he was trying to tell, the teacher said, no, that's not the right way. You got to do this. And he was like, no,
right.
I can't. And he just went into a shelter. I mean, he just went back, like, into himself. Like, he started freezing up because he could not explain how he did it. People don't understand how he did it. But the answer was right. My question to you is, why would the – because the teacher was frustrated, and she wouldn't allow that to be the answer, even though it was the right answer. She wouldn't allow him to be the one who – came up with the answer first because he didn't do it her way. Why
right.
are teachers
well, we
badgering?
See that a lot.
Why are they badgering these children that you and you know that the teacher knows this kid's situation? Why would she punish him?
But that, and it's a really good question because teachers, especially junior high at start, they want you to show your work. They want you to explain the process that you get something. And often these kids, and often very gifted kids, not just necessarily autistic, but these kids just know it. And they have this gift
right.
mathematically that they can't always explain. It just... Their brain works differently, and they just know the answer, and they can't explain how they get it. These kids are often mathematically geniuses, but they have a lot of trouble communicating. So their written language and their reading might be poor, especially written language, but boy, they can do that math. Also, you know, music is mathematically based, and what's interesting is the musical savants that are often, you know, children or adults who are autistic, who have autism, but they are musical savants. They're the ones that can sit down and just play. And you ask, how did you do that? And they can't even tell you. And, you know, you see the mathematical geniuses because the way the brain works, and we said the neurological aspects, how the brain is developed can be very different in that they can do things that teachers may not understand. And teachers often will do that because they want to make sure a child didn't cheat. They want to explain how they got it.
But Dr. Massey, they already are aware of the child's condition. And so... How can we stop the teachers from abusing our children because they are frustrated that the child is who they are?
Well,
they
can't
help that they are designed that way. They were created that way.
They were created
that way. So why should they be punished? Not only are they being punished by the teacher, but the teacher is punishing them in front of their peers.
Right, which is horrible. But
which is
see,
horrible.
We
which
have
causes...
a responsibility to teach the teachers how to work with these kids. See, remember I said that at one time I was an observer and supervisor for general ed teachers getting a certificate in autism. I did that for Orange County Department of Education. And so we were trying to train general ed teachers what to look for, what to do, what not to do. And they could obtain this autism certificate. Now, I can't tell you if that's still done or even if that's done in all states. But I know at that time, which is, you know, way back there in the early 2000s, middle 2000s, they were beginning to have certificates because it's very important to train general ed teachers. And remember, I also taught at that university where I was teaching interventions for children at risk and for special education, and it was for teachers in the master's program in general education. But we can't wait that long. Not all teachers go and get that master's. That needs to happen early on in the training for teachers who are just becoming teachers. They need to know, you know, how these children are different. And if they
It makes no sense to me to put them, to give a child to me, and I'm a football coach, and they're coming to my gymnastic class. I don't know anything about gymnastics. Why am I, you know, how am I teaching them something I have no idea what I'm talking about? I mean, these children are going there, and the teachers that are supposed to be teaching them are not aware of how to teach them. That's ridiculous. I don't even, the system is not being a benefit for our children. They're quick to put them down and say what's wrong with them, but they're not quick to say what's wrong with themselves. And that's what, you know, people like you who are aware of these things that are happening in the school system, we want you guys to fight that and fix that for our children, because it's not fair. And I always tell you, I said, the other thing, and I want to talk about that next week with you and whoever, I think it was, I can't think of her name, but the lady, you guys went to school together, I think. But anyway, I want
Stephanie?
To get her. Yes, Stephanie. I want to talk to you guys in regards to, wow, I have so much on my heart right now. I'm so emotional about this, and I apologize. But it's I don't like our children being abused. But I want to talk to you and Stephanie about this in a different way next week. I have other questions, but how can we help the parents with these kids that are suffering, because the parents are suffering too. And if their hearts, if their battery runs low, the child is at more risk. And so how do we support the parents as well in this? See, we got to build a system around our children to protect them and keep them in the safe zone so they can grow up and be something really good, because children that are as smart as some of these kids are could be a blessing to the world. And
absolutely.
Not just some scientific experiment, but a blessing to the world.
They can be mathematical geniuses. It can come up with some invention that you can't believe. It could be musical geniuses. It can write the music that lifts the soul. I mean,
absolutely.
They are important people, and that's why I think that you really do need to start with education in the universities, and you also need to do in-services. One of the things I did before when I was in California is that I did in-services for teachers to train them. So they recognize, you know, all these different things. They would recognize these children. Often these children have so much anxiety that, you really have to, you have to know how to work with them, because it's often a byproduct of the difficulties they have in social situations, or they're hypersensitive to noise. There's this whole theory that we can't even get into today called the theory of mindfulness. It's mind blindness. So you have the theory of the mind. There's so many different things about motivational systems. I mean, even when we think about cognition and how these brains work, there are different theoretical models that can be discussed and can be taught so they understand, just like what you were saying, you know, why these kids get certain things and other things are so hard. Why is there a problem in being able to take others' perspective and have empathy? See, they often have a lot of problems with perspective taking. So there's so much
yes.
that can be taught. Yeah, there's also, you know, we call it that they have a weak central coherence, and there's theories on that and executive function. There's all these things that teachers need to be trained in, because these kids can often be very smart, but they think differently, and they need to know how.
Absolutely. I just think that the teacher should not, I think that it should be a requirement for the teacher to have taken a class, a requirement for them to take a class before they can start teaching. Take a class on autism, children that are autistic. And before they are allowed to start teaching, period. Because we have to protect our children. And, you know, this they're already in a bad way. And to make it worse for them is disgusting. And we expect more. We expect more, and we want more for our children.
Sometimes I think, and this is just me speaking personally, that 20, 30, 40 years ago, there weren't a lot of fields for people to go into, women. You know, you either became a teacher or a nurse or an airline stewardess is what we called them. And so now, you know, so many of the people go into different fields. We need more men, you know, and, I'm not quite sure if that's still happening. For a while there was, but we need that the teachers should not be just taught in their specific skill area, like math, geometry, you know, to be a math teacher, to be this teacher. They need to be taught about all areas of special needs, all areas of giftedness, because they're going to have all these kids in their classrooms. And that's why you're right. It should be done at that beginning level. You know, you have a 4-year college curriculum, and, you know, some schools another 2 years to get a teaching credential. I'm not even sure anymore, because right now they have so few people applying for jobs that, you know, they're reaching out and getting people, I think, that often haven't had all the training that is so important to have. So I think you're right, Wardell. It needs to be part of the curriculum for getting a teacher certificate. And I think some of the universities are trying to do that now.
Yes. What you say universities, I mean, you talk about in terms of getting a certificate to teach? Or are you talking about just they want them to have that qualification before they can teach?
Well, but in order to get your certificate, you have a program, right, where you have completed an educational program, and I think it should be a part of that. But remember, there is so much to learn.
Is anybody fighting? Is anyone fighting for that, by the way? We have to get ready to go. But
well, you know, honey, I can't tell you because I wasn't educated. I mean, I was in the state I'm currently in. I did that so long ago. So things have changed. So I don't know. And maybe somebody in the
But don't you think things should change for the better and not the worse? I mean,
well,
if you did that so long ago, I mean, we were in California about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was, 3 or 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, you still had your private practice and you were still working with children with that disease, a disorder. Okay, so you're working with children with that, and to me, that means that you should know, be aware of what's happening in the school system, because your children, that the children that are coming to see you, are children that go to schools. The schools are the ones that are diagnosing these children, and then they're sending them to you saying that they have a problem and they need to be worked with or whatever the case is, and the parents come in, at, you know, and so when you're sitting there with these kids, wouldn't it be good for you to know that there's teachers that these kids are going to be around that are aware of their situation and they are knowledgeable about their situation and that they know how to treat these children and
care for
them?
Well, that's why I said that, you know, there had been a lot of programs implemented in the schools with
services. But back then, we're talking only 3 years ago. Didn't you know that 3 years ago?
No, I'm talking about a long time ago. I'm talking about, you know,
well, that doesn't
help.
When I was
an autism program specialist, which was back in the early 2000s. There were programs. I can't address to what they do with just getting a bachelor's in your initial
Okay, but just,
you know,
let me just ask you this.
How much?
You were just working in the school system last year, the year before, helping out, doing, I'm not sure what that position is called, and you were dealing with children with those diseases, I mean, with that disorder. And so when you're dealing with those children with that disorder, you knew about their teachers. Were those teachers experienced? Did they have degree or any knowledge about children with this disorder?
Well, again, that's a really good question. I was interning here as a licensed specialist in school psychology, and I worked in two completely different school systems. I cannot tell you what kind of programs they were doing for general education, because at that time I was just going in and doing assessments, and doing counseling. So
that once again, people are basically telling you what the problem is, but they're not telling you how to fix it. They're just telling you these kids have a problem. They're not telling you how to fix it. And so these kids continuously go through from elementary to junior high school to high school knowing that they have a problem, but no one's trying to protect them in the process. And that's all I'm saying.
I'm not saying that not now, Wardell. I'm saying that there were in services in the school where there, you know, are attempts to make, you know, to bring teachers up in the knowledge of how to work with kids. And like I said, I was an adjunct professor for a master's program that was including, you know,
okay,
interventions. And
we're going to continue our conversation and our talks and stuff. And thank you for being so open to, you know, our questions between the listeners and myself. We just want, like I said, the best, just like we know you want the best for the kids too. And so, you know, we asking you the tough questions sometimes because you're all we have right now, right? And so whoever comes in.
I have to say, go ahead. No,
go ahead.
And finish your
thought. I'm finished.
I was just going to say that I worked with children with all kinds of disabilities. I did assessments and counseling with, you know, all children. But I really loved working with children with autism because it was so interesting to see how their mind worked. So you felt like you were really making a difference working with these kids who, again, though, they can be all the way from intellectually delayed all the way to gifted.
Okay. That's fine.
They are so receptive, I think, in wanting to learn how to adapt, especially those that are higher cognitively.
I thought that they were the opposite of that. I actually thought they didn't like change. I didn't think that they were
receptive
to it.
Well, I don't mean change. They're not receptive to change often, but the older ones, you know, that I worked with that were very intellectually gifted, especially the older ones, like going in, I was trying to get them set up for going into college. They are smart enough to realize they needed to learn.
Okay.
How to
all right,
adapt
so we're
going to
finish. We're going to thank you so much, and thank you for, you know, like I said, sharing your wisdom and being on the front lines with those our kids. We love them, and we appreciate them. We appreciate you or anybody that's working to try to enrich their lives and make it better for them on this journey, a lifetime journey. So
it is a lifetime journey. It doesn't end just in school.
Absolutely. So thank you. And we'll talk to you again next week. And so just have a blessed week. And we appreciate you, Dr. Massey. God bless you. And we'll be right back, guys. Right.
Ooh, do, 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 kitchen chair. She broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Suddenly,
ooh,
I tell you, I just could not stop playing these a cappella songs. I mean, these singers are just amazing in how much they bless us with their tonality. I mean, the chord progressions and just the skill to be able to do that, you know, with each other. And I know these guys, all the groups that I just played you, they do that together. They just go at it together. And so, oh, man, I'm so grateful. The last song you heard was the Silvers. Ooh, man, oh, man, come on, y'all. You got to give it up for those guys. I mean, that was just absolutely beautiful. And on and on and on. But let me just say this. I want to first of all thank my wife, Dr. Gayla Massey. I know her heart. I know she has an amazing heart. She loves these kids probably more than I could ever love them. She spends so much time with them. And so, you know, and I know that, you know, she came on and she really was just trying to share the information. And here I am, a boxer in the ring. She's probably going, what is wrong with this guy? And I'm like, but, you know. And so I just pray that, you know, she understands that there are a lot of people like myself that are frustrated with our children being, you know, hurt. You know, there's people like her that's in there trying to help the kids. But then, you know, when they go back into that classroom, then they're being victimized. And so the information that's being shared by people like my wife with the children is a blessing for them. But when they get back into that classroom where there's no protection for them, you know, some classrooms, some teachers are very sensitive and aware, and they do their best to protect the kids in that environment. But then you have those that are not. And so those are the ones I'm talking about, the ones that are not, the ones that are being abused, the ones that feel like they just can't win, the ones that just they were born in a situation that was unfair, and now they're trying to go through life and it's unfair. In school, where you think you can go someplace and maybe a different environment will make it better for them, and it should, and it's not. And so that's the situation that makes me a little sad for those kids. So that's why I come in with that boxing mentality and just, oh, please help my babies, help these babies. Now, I did mention earlier in the show that I had a child that was diagnosed as autism, but I was speaking in general. Fortunately for me, none of my children are artistic. I just, you know, for the ones that are, you know, I feel it like if they were mine, because they're babies, and we're supposed to love them, right? We're supposed to love them. And it's, for me, it's easy. I love them. I don't have to think about it. I feel it. It's inside me to love those babies. They're God's little babies. And so we have a responsibility to them. And so, you know, so we look forward to just learning a little bit more. And this was just the beginning. It was intense. It started getting a little intense, right? But that was because, you know, I know the heart of my wife. So, and I know that she's trying so hard. She tried, she did it for so many years. Now she's retired, but she's going back because they are in her, what she does is in demand, and the school systems are desperate for people like her. But in the process, I would like for her to say to the school system, the classroom that this child is in, is the teacher aware of how to handle a child like this? So that's what I'm praying for. Anyway, you guys have a blessed day, and thank you for being a part of Soul Art Records Radio. We love you and appreciate you very much. And so I know that some kids have great moms and great dads, people who love them and take care of them through that. And so thank you for taking care of those babies. Thank you for loving them and being the best parents that you could be. in that situation can be very difficult and challenging. But, you know, there's people out there that want to be a blessing to you, and there's different programs out there that you can go to get help. And so we'll talk about that next week, you know, as well, about, you know, where can you go to get help? How do you get this situation where it's better for you and the child, okay? So God bless all of you guys. Thanks again for tuning in. Tomorrow we will take out some time just to spend time with our Creator and share, listen for His word to bless us, and just a moment to meditate on how wonderful God has been to us, and to meditate on what it is that He would have us to do at this point. So that's at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tune in and have a good time with us. All right? And God bless you and guys, and you take care. Thanks, Greg, for everything you do, bro. I appreciate you and love you, man. And you guys all take care. All right? And we'll catch you later on Solar Records Radio. Good night.
sipping best of the other fellas, little sunny. And drinking that wine, remember the schoolyard days.
Yeah, we had to take you home, man. You were out on
oh,
it, man.
Oh, better than that. Lord have mercy.
Hey, but listen.
Yeah, remember when we used to run around there? Steal a hubcap off the car.
What you talking about? And batteries?
We lucky we ain't get busted, man.
Listen.
And I know here comes the fun.
Oh.
Hey, bro, what corner was you coming to me?
That's just the last.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
But dig this here.
Yeah.
Now, see, when all that gang war was going on, I'll tell you one thing I never forget.
It was that.
See, when I got home, first thing I would hear is,
what?
Bill!
Yeah.
Where you been, boy?
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's
mom. I say, I was out with Sonny Bird and Lil Sonny.
Putting it all up.
I had to put it on somebody. Hey, Bill, what's your mama say? She say, boy, now I'm gonna tell you.
What?
You know you getting big now.
Yeah.
You gotta watch the things that you doing out in that street.
That's right.
And
right.
You go to jail.
That's right.
And I'm gonna tell you something, man. Mama wasn't wrong.
No.
But what about Pop? Oh, we ain't talking about Pop.
No, man. Pop was all right.
Pop was hanging out, you know.
Hanging out. I think Pop was drinking more wine than we
used to.
I know my pop did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My pop hung right over with you, boy.
Yeah. Stay out all night. Come on, clothes all wrinkled up, lip balls all on them.
Hey, Sonny. How about when your mommy cooked them good home-cooked bits today?
The green?
Oh, man.
Hey. Boy, your mama sure cooked them.
Radio. God bless you. Enjoy yourself. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye. Peace out. Love you. Go Delphi.
Stay.